This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Saturday, March 9th, 2024. I'm Jessica Rosenthal. A Supreme Court ruling this past week keeps former President Trump on the ballot. But will the justices side with him in a future case as the docket fills up with potential blockbusters this election year?
If the court does something super narrow about immunity, there's a chance that something not completely terrible happens for the Trump legal team.
I'm Jared Halpern. One of the most popular apps on the planet is closer to being banned in the U.S. by Congress.
We're told that high schoolers and middle schoolers were lighting up the phone lines on Capitol Hill because they were afraid they're going to get rid of TikTok.
This is the Fox News Rundown from Washington.
Former President Trump will remain on the ballots in states across the country after the Supreme Court ruled that Colorado cannot kick him off.
I think it will go a long way toward bringing our country together, which our country needs.
Colorado Secretary of State Jenna Griswold told Fox affiliate KDVR she was disappointed in the Supreme Court's ruling.
I do believe that states have the ability under Section 3 of the 14th Amendment to decide to not put on our ballots oath-breaking insurrectionists. The United States Supreme Court disagrees with that and says Congress has to act first. Congress has to pass some type of law allowing Section 3 of the 14th Amendment to be applied.
After the decision, the former president complimented the justices and said their next battle has to do with his belief that he should not be able to be prosecuted in his federal case involving January 6th and the 2020 election. He's charged with conspiracy to defraud the U.S. and obstructing an official proceeding, among other things.
If a president doesn't have full immunity, you really don't have a president because nobody that is serving in that office will have the courage to make, in many cases, what would be the right decision, or it could be the wrong decision. It could be, in some cases, the wrong decision, but they have to make decisions.
Either way, the court isn't hearing that case until April and likely won't decide it until June, pushing a possible trial well into the year. Still this week, the president went into Super Tuesday knowing his name would be on ballots across the country this election year.
It did. And Jessica, can you believe that was this week?
Shannon Bream is the host of Fox News Sunday.
I feel like there have been 5,000 news cycles since that was just Monday when he had that big win at the Supreme Court. All states.
And then there was someone noticed that while Justices Sotomayor, Kagan, and Brown Jackson agreed Colorado should not get to kick Trump off the ballot, there was like a bit of a dissent within the concurrence that said this ruling still went like too far. It addressed too much. Can you explain that?
Yeah. And I had to. So this was a per curiam opinion, meaning it speaks for the court. Essentially, everybody signs on to it. There's not an author, but there were these other concurrences that very much read like a dissent, at least the one from the three justices that you mentioned, Sotomayor, Jackson, and Kagan. And it essentially said the main opinion went too far in directing Congress, how it should address this problem, what the limits would be on Congress in doing this. They felt like we agree with the bottom line question that Colorado couldn't do this, and by extension, any state. But they didn't like that the court went into answering all of these other questions and giving Congress direct guidance on how they think they should solve the problem. So they thought those questions were to be left for another day. And it was an overreach by the what essentially was the majority opinion.
Yeah. What was an example of like going to like what did they address essentially that they that those three justices said you shouldn't have gone there yet?
So Section 3 of the 14th Amendment is the one that has the language about if you've taken an oath, if you've participated in an insurrection. But Section 5 goes on to say that Congress is really the one that has to put together the teeth for enforcing these things. And so while states felt like, and states like Colorado argued it was quote unquote self-executing, meaning what they laid out in Section 3 means the states can jump in and be the ones to enforce it. What the court did was go on to say, hey, listen, this is really left to Congress under Section 5, and there are limits on how they can do that. It's got to be narrowly tailored to the specific issue. I think there was so much instructional language there that the three concurrence folks, who much again read like a dissent, felt like it just went way beyond where this case needed to go. And they prefer what they argued is the historical guidepost of the court is that they most narrowly tailor their opinions and don't answer questions they don't need to get into answering.
Interesting. After this ruling, Trump was very complimentary of the court. I wonder how long that might last, though, because the court has agreed to consider this fight over presidential immunity in the January 6th case. And just so everybody, just for a reminder, he's charged there with conspiracy to defraud the U.S., witness tampering, conspiracy against the rights of citizens, and obstruction of an attempt to obstruct an official proceeding. What will the justices consider here? Narrowly, I guess, when it comes to presidential immunity, like how far it extends, essentially.
Yeah. And you make such a great point because, yes, President Trump had a ton of praise, all caps, you know, like he likes to do on Monday. I have a feeling that come June, it's going to be tempered. Now, listen, if the court does something super narrow about immunity, there's a chance that something not completely terrible happens for the Trump legal team. But most folks look at the decision you got from the lower court, that three-judge panel from the D.C. Circuit. That was 57 pages. It, too, was per curiam, meaning we're all in agreement, sweeping, saying that, you know, there are absolutely limits to immunity for any president. You can't have somebody committing crimes, things that we would all know and recognize as such, and just never be prosecuted because they happen to be president at one point. So I think it's going to be a much tougher fight at the Supreme Court. It is not going to be a 9-0 we all or kumbaya Colorado ballot decision. But I think the court is really going to dig into this question. And remember, special counsel Jack Smith, in a filing back in December when he wanted the Supreme Court to hear the case, said they were the only ones who could resolve a question of this import. Now, after he got that great ruling from the D.C. Circuit, basically told the Supreme Court, like, OK, it's settled. You don't need to get involved, because the whole win for the Trump team is the delay to that Jack Smith trial, right, which was supposed to start last Monday. So even if President Trump ultimately isn't successful on the immunity argument, it's already a huge win for his team because it presses this trial likely closer to an August, September, even October start, if that's where it goes.
And this was the case where one of the appellate justices, right, had said that it was quite incendiary at the time, a claim like if a president like killed somebody, then, you know, we'd be talking about, does the president have immunity? Like, no, there has to be a line, right? Is that sort of the crux of this?
Yeah, during the oral arguments, there was a lot of pushback with these hypotheticals. Well, what about this? What about killing a person? What are you doing? You know, and it made for some really awkward, tough moments and arguments for the Trump legal team, because I think everybody agrees there's got to be some kind of limit on that. Now, what President Trump will regularly say, and his legal team says in their filings as well, is it would essentially handcuff a president. A president can't be worried about carrying a drone strike or something involving a foreign leader or a threat. Because if so, President Trump said last week, it would turn into a ceremonial office. I think he said that this week. Again, the weeks are all blurring together.
I know.
But he has said similar things in the past and talked about the fact that a president has to be free to make really difficult decisions without being worried that at some point it would be turned into a criminal prosecution against him. And he argues that any president should be worried about that D or R behind their name, because it's a dangerous precedent to set. So there's a lot for the Supreme Court to chew on. They will do that on April 25th.
Okay. And now let's move away a little bit from the Trump train, because the Supreme Court also this week temporarily stopped the implementation of a Texas law that lets state law enforcement handle border matters by arresting migrants who are undocumented. Is the problem here the Immigration and Nationality Act? Is the law on this that such immigration matters are really under federal jurisdiction and Congress has already regulated that?
I mean, that's always been the precedent. I remember covering Arizona's SB 1070 at the court years ago. It was one of
the— Show me your papers, law.
I mean, it was one of the most rambunctious, raucous crowds I've seen at the court. And I've seen them there for, you know, abortion and ACA and for same-sex marriage and all kinds of things that have been very heated. But that one was especially crazy with then-Governor Jan Brewer. I remember she got hit in the head by something outside of the court, inadvertent. I think. But it was just, there was a lot of jostling and craziness. And listen, the court basically said there, we get your frustration. We get what you're doing, Arizona. But this is something that is left to the feds. And that is precedent. That's constitutional. That's where it sits. Of course, the states now argue they are not doing what they're supposed to do. They're not enforcing the law. We have a right to defend ourselves and our borders, essentially, if the feds aren't doing it. So Arizona tried that argument. Things have changed. The court makeup has changed. We'll see. But for now, that law is on hold while there's an emergency issue pending. The folks involved in the case have until, I believe it is Wednesday, to file their responses, and then the court will make a decision whether they're going to do something on an emergency basis while the case plays out on the actual merits.
All right, we just have a couple minutes left, Shannon. So let's do a little bit of a lightning round, brief understanding of a few more cases, the stakes. Justices will hear a case about an abortion drug, mifepristone, FDA approved, but a lower court judge took issue with the approval process for that drug. Arguments March 26th. What's at stake here?
Yes. So you're not going to lose access to that drug, even if there is a losing argument to those who back it. It's essentially about the rollbacks to a couple of things, about having to see a doctor in person, how late into a pregnancy it can be used. So the pill itself will remain out there and available, but there may be restrictions on access to it if, you know, the court rules in favor of those who are challenging that.
And January 6th protesters, there's a case regarding whether or not they were improperly charged with obstructing official proceedings. Arguments are to be heard in mid-April. I imagine that sort of discussion in an election year with Trump on the ballot could generate a lot of interest.
Yeah, and it could impact, you know, hundreds potentially of J6 defendants, and it could impact President Trump's case that Jack Smith has pending against him, because the charge they were looking at, obstruction of an official proceeding, if they toss that, that's one of the charges that Smith has against Trump, could impact his case too.
And lastly, emergency room abortions. If a woman's life is in danger and she arrives at the ER and an abortion is required to save her life, would doctors be in trouble for performing that in states with strict abortion laws? Arguments to be heard in late April. That could be, I imagine, a pretty important case as well.
Yeah, that's a really tricky one, because states after the overturning of Roe v. Wade made a lot of different decisions about how far or if at all into a pregnancy they will allow abortions. There are folks that argue this guidance that came out from the Biden administration about how they have to operate in emergency rooms, emergency settings, could force doctors who have conscience protections into performing an abortion they don't want to be involved with. So you got the state laws in conflict with the federal guidance from the Biden administration. Again, that means you've got two abortion cases that will likely land in June with a decision, and that will be very important on the campaign trail in the middle of an election year.
Shannon Bream, your mind is amazing. Thank you so much.
Jessica, great to talk with you.
I'm Charles Payne. Listen to my Unstoppable Prosperity podcast so I can get you making money right now. Whether stocks are hitting new all-time highs or in freefall mode, opportunities abound. So why are so many potential investors still sitting on the sidelines? In a new season of my podcast, I'm going to get you in the game. After 38 years on Wall Street, I'm ready to impart some lessons and get you invested in the greatest wealth-generating machine in history. Listen anytime, everywhere at foxbusinesspodcast.com or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast.
The youth of America are often said to be apathetic politically, unengaged in the process. Now, whether or not that's a fair description, this week certainly showed that when the right issue pops, they'll make their voices heard. Congressional offices have been bombarded with phone calls from young Americans, middle schoolers, and teenagers over legislation that could block TikTok, one of the most popular social media apps in the country, from U.S. networks. The House Energy and Commerce Committee voted 50-0 to advance a bill that would require TikTok to divest from its Chinese-owned developer or be prohibited in the United States. National security officials raised concerns about TikTok, warning foreign adversaries can use the app to surveil Americans and collect an awful lot of intelligence. Federal employees are not allowed to download the app on government devices. Fox News senior congressional correspondent Chad Pergram has been following this story, the legislation, the outcry, and the potential challenges ahead for lawmakers.
Well, Jared, as I say, TikTok boom, 50 to nothing, as you say, in the Energy and Commerce Committee. They passed this bill. Steve Scalise, the majority leader, says they're going to put it on the floor in the coming days. The reason that this is moving so quickly is that there is a real concern that TikTok is just scraping up inordinate amounts of information about Americans, tracking where you go, using this for nefarious purposes. And even the outcry about this piece of legislation, those who are the backers of the legislation said this kind of underscores what we were talking about. The bill basically says that TikTok cannot operate in the United States unless it divests itself from ByteDance, which is its Chinese quasi-government owner, and says, okay, you can't live on platforms or app stores here in the U.S. It has to be an independent thing away from ByteDance. That's the problem. So they say this is not a ban on TikTok. That's something that TikTok takes issue with. They're saying that this is going to undercut the First Amendment. So back to my point about why this kind of underscores the problem, you know, when you have Democrats and Republicans concerned about TikTok living on everyone's phones as a national security issue, is that there was a little prompt you could go to on TikTok once you heard about this. And if it's anything that's amazing, we're told that high schoolers and middle schoolers were lighting up the phone lines on Capitol Hill because they were afraid they're going to get rid of TikTok. And calling, no less. Calling, mind you. Middle schoolers.
TikTok is...
I'm
not on TikTok, but man, I have a young son and a lot of his friends. I mean, I've seen the dances and everything. It's kind of a silly app in that regard. But there is, to your point, a concern that this is being used for nefarious purposes. And even President Biden, the White House, has said, you know, we'll sign it. This has been negotiated by Congress. Talk to me about, though, those First Amendment concerns. I mean, is there much precedent for the United States telling a private company to divest or face consequences?
Well, think about this with the Bells, you know, back in the early 80s, or even, you know, with the forming of some of the big trust companies in the early part of the 20th century. Okay, so there's a little bit of precedent there. The difference here is that you have something that's foreign-owned and is a national security concern, that they are sucking up all of your information and following where you go. And this is where you had some of the Democrats and Republicans, especially Dan Crenshaw, who's a Republican from Texas. He said, look at the outcry over this app, people calling Capitol Hill. He said, is that they have been inured to what's going on, and therefore they're so upset, they're so obsessed with this app. It's like it's a drug, which is exactly what they're concerned about. And you allude to, you know, somebody in your family or whatnot. You know, they love TikTok. They love being on it. He said, well, what point does China start to really make this kind of a psychological operation and go after people in that sense and kind of try to change public opinion? Then they've won because they've won the hearts and minds. And the most interesting thing I find about TikTok here, Jared, is that if you look at TikTok in China and you're a kid.
Oh, it's very different.
You can only spend 40 minutes a day on it, number one. They show you science and nature and educational videos and things of that sort.
not silly
here
dances.
It's just silly unless they're scientifically, you know, dealing with a dance move or something perhaps. But that's the thing is that this is programmed very differently in the People's Republic of China.
So, you know, it brings up a lot of interesting points. I guess, you know, the House says, to your point, they're going to vote on this in a matter of days. Is the Senate expected? I mean, this has support in the Senate as well?
Unclear. I mean, this is something that has been mostly a House project. And you know the pace at which things go around here on Capitol Hill, Jared. This one's moving fast. The fact that this kind of came out of nowhere just a few days ago. Went through committee. They would still have to mark it up in committee and then put it on the floor. And Steve Scalise, as I said, wants to put this on the floor at the end of next week. That's really fast. I mean, that is lightning speed here on Capitol Hill. The Senate, though, if they get a wide bipartisan margin, though, they might say, yeah, we have to put this on. I mean, there's no divide between the House and the Senate in terms of the concerns there. I mean, Josh Hawley, the Republican senator from Missouri, he has expressed a lot of concerns about TikTok, for one. He's been very outspoken on that score. There are going to be a little more reservation from some members, frankly, because they're going to say, wait a minute, should we be stepping on an entire industry or a particular company. And you get into some of that, you know, there's some Supreme Court cases that deal with that and what the, as I say, trusts. And you go back to one of the most famous Supreme Court cases of all time, colloquially referred to as Youngstown Steel, which was the threat of the federal government dealing with, the steel industry in northeastern Ohio back in the 1950s. So, yes, they will take a little more time with it, but there is concern in the Senate about the national security implications of TikTok, too.
Well, and listen, we've heard those national security concerns here at the White House. The National Security Advisor has talked about it. The National Security Council has talked about it. But at the same time, the Biden campaign has faced some criticism because they are new to TikTok. They joined TikTok within the last couple of weeks. It has raised questions about, well, why is the White House on one hand raising all of these concerns and telling Americans not to, to be on this platform, and the campaign is, and the campaign says, listen, we're going to talk to people where they are. There are a lot of people, Chad, on TikTok. They are younger, a group of voters or potential voters that a lot of politicians would love to reach. Are we going to see some of that calls of hypocrisy with some of these congressional and Senate campaigns?
It's almost as though they are talking out of two sides of their mouth. I mean, Katie Britt, the Republican senator from Alabama, who spoke and gave the response to the president's address, alluded to this in her comments the other night. I asked Roger Krishnamoorthy, Democrat from Illinois, who is the top Democrat on the China Committee and one of the most ardent advocates of this bill, same question. And he said, I'm not going to tell them how to run their campaign. He said, but they should be very careful in using this. So I do think that there's a little bit of a difference here when it comes to national security and what the administration is hoping to do and what they're doing as it pertains to campaigning. Because again, you know, you would be foolish in some sense if you're Joe Biden and you're the oldest president ever and you're trying to reach young voters. Well, where would you go? You meet them where they are.
That's right.
That's TikTok. Yeah. And that's the conundrum they face.
Well, and they are younger. You talked about sort of high school and middle school kids calling members of Congress.
Calling.
Sure. Yeah.
It's amazing.
Not sending text or DMs. But I am curious, I guess, that's not a constituency that obviously votes, is not always really represented. I am just curious, kind of from like the political science symposium perspective, if we were talking about an app that were used by adults more than teens and tweens, would this be sailing through Congress in the way that it is now?
Well, think about regulation for other things. Think about like tobacco products, alcohol. Tobacco is probably a really good one. Alcohol, a really good one if you look at historically what we did with prohibition here, you know, more than 100 years ago, and then repealing that less than 100 years ago. That was mainly an adult product, okay. Certainly with smoking, the idea that they didn't want to outlaw smoking and tobacco products, and that's where they, you know, they banned advertising on television effectively, and because there were some First Amendment issues there, but they said, okay, you can still advertise in magazines and so on and so forth. Of course, we had the big tobacco settlement in the 1990s, late 1990s, 1997, that started to change some of that, but plaster on every time you would have an ad or a cigarette pack, you know, these very stark warnings. You know, the Surgeon General has deemed that consumption of this product, smoking of cigarettes, is dangerous to your health, or that's very strict. You didn't see that on any other product, and it didn't completely inhibit people from smoking, frankly. So and some people might even make the argument about the lure and the addictive quality of it. You know, maybe, sure. I haven't heard anybody say this, but, there is digital nicotine in TikTok.
Absolutely. No, it's a good point, and it's a fascinating thing, as I know Congress is kind of wrestling with this space. I think it's kind of part of the AI conversation. We've certainly seen the heads of social media companies have to testify in front of Congress. So this is a space that the Congress is certainly trying to, I think, find its foothold and find where they kind of play a role. It will be a fascinating debate, I think, to watch moving forward, because to your point, 50-0 in a committee, it does not happen every day in this House of Representatives. Yeah. As we talk about the House of Representatives, another thing to talk about, Chad, is government funding. I was surprised to see how quickly this, I guess we're calling it a minibus, that this package of appropriations bills kind of started to work its way through. Yes. Can everybody breathe easy?
Volkswagen with a minibus.
Can everybody breathe easy now? Are we done with CRs for a little bit now, or is this about to rear its ugly head right in the heart of an election season?
As we speak right now, we are not completely out of the woods. The House of Representatives moved very quickly. The Senate is still trying to wrestle and figure out how to proceed and finish this up. So that's a big question. So, you know, there is a threat of a partial government shutdown. They thought they might be able to come to an agreement quickly on Friday. That did not necessarily, happen. But the fact that the House was able to move this with, more than 300 votes, and again, and again, and again, they did it with way more Democrats than Republicans, but yet these conservatives are willing to say, you know, we don't like what you're doing there, Mike Johnson, but we're okay with you. We weren't okay when Kevin McCarthy did one interim spending bill. You've now done three, but that's okay.
I mean, that's my question. I mean, this is, to your point, this minibus, this, you know, kind of putting together a bunch of appropriations bills, got a lot of support from Democrats. What does that mean for Mike Johnson?
Well, that's the problem right there, is that at some point that chicken is going to come home to roost, because he cannot continue to talk a good game and say this is what we're doing and we're getting somewhere. They got some minimal cuts. They got a few things they wanted. You know, both sides were probably pleased with what they got. But you have just this core of conservatives who just don't like to spend any money. I want to go back to a couple of years before and the policy riders that they'd like to see. I don't know that any of those bills could pass. They can talk about them a lot, but they don't have the votes. Why? Because guess what? It's about the math. Mike Johnson does not have math in his favor right now when it pertains to these votes. And even though there's been some sweating of the palms about getting the government funded this weekend, I think I would look really deeply at that deadline for the next minibus. Mm. This is a tranche of six bills here. There are six remaining outstanding appropriations bills that they need to do by the 22nd of March. Those are more nettlesome, dealing with the Department of Labor, Labor H, as we call it, Labor, Health and Human Services, the Pentagon, DHS. Boy, that's going to be a monster right there. And to get this all done before the 22nd of December. And part of the reason, you know, we saw this clash and slowdown in the Senate speaks to why we might have the risk of a shutdown then, is because you might be able to get a bill that moves through the House with, again, lots of Democrats and some Republicans. And, you know, Mike Johnson might be able to weather that storm again. But again, to do it in that period of time and get it across the finish line by the 22nd of March, when you have these conservatives who are now emboldened. You see, here's the new factor that nobody's thought about yet. You had these other conservatives who were willing to say, okay, we don't like these bills, but give us these votes on these amendments in the Senate, and we'll subject them to 60-vote thresholds, and we'll stretch things out a couple of days, but we'll go home by Friday, and everything will be funded. The difference now is that Mitch McConnell has announced that he's out the door, and you have people wanting to move into leadership, move into his position. Rick Scott, Republican from Florida, has been posturing on this, is not committed to run for leader. There's been some chatter about Steve Daines, Republican from Montana, to say nothing of the kind of declared candidates here, John Thune, the whip, and John Cornyn, the former whip. So that's the factor that might be making this more troublesome on the minibus here, the first minibus in the Senate, compared to if they try to do the second one, because the McConnell factor has changed. The tectonic plates have shifted a bit in the Senate, Jared.
Let me finish with this, and it's a State of the Union question. How was your reunion with expelled Congressman and, I guess, now congressional candidate George Santos? And what was the reaction? And what was the reaction from his former colleagues?
Well, I was shocked. I was cutting through a tunnel here at the Capitol, going downstairs not long before the speech, and here he came. And on one hand, I was very surprised to see him, and on another, I was not, because he's George Santos. And people said, well, how can he come back? Well, we've only expelled six House members in history, six. And three of them were around the time of the Civil War, one in the 1980s, one about 22 years ago now, Jim Trafficant from Ohio. Mm-hmm. Trafficant's dead. Ozzie Myers from Pennsylvania, he's still around. Actually had legal issues again in his 80s just last year. So it's kind of uncharted territory about what you do with an expelled member. These Confederate members they expelled back during the Civil War, they ain't around anymore. So George Santos had barely been a member, not even a year. But former members have the ability to have floor privileges, to come into the building. They have that, you know, all their life. And so if you've retired or you've quit or whatever, you just didn't run for re-election or you were defeated, you can come back into the building. And regularly you see people, especially around big events. I saw Mike Ross, who is a former Democratic representative from Arkansas, the other day up here for State of the Union. You know, there were a couple other former, because they came in for the speech or they have other business or they just come to say hi. So Santos, this was a little bit different coming into the building. He was definitely here to troll his colleagues. The fact that he could do it and do it on a big stage, State of the Union, command some news oxygen, we're talking about it, you know, announced during the speech that he was going to run against Nick LaLota, the Republican representative from Long Island, a different
who
district.
Who was one of those that voted to oust him.
Absolutely, and was one of the most fervent persons wanting to get him out, absolutely. This was a troll job by Santos of the tallest order.
Well, it's always interesting to be on Capitol Hill, maybe no more so than on days where there is a State of the Union to be delivered. So, Chad, appreciate the long hours this week. Get some rest this weekend. We'll talk soon, my friend.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Tomorrow on the Fox News Rundown from Washington, President Biden wants to make home ownership a little less costly, using the State of the Union address to propose a new tax credit for first-time home buyers. We'll talk about that with the chair of the White House Council of Economic Advisors, Jared Bernstein. And Super Tuesday all but sealed a 2020 election rematch after near sweeps in the primaries by President Biden and former President Trump. Jessica Rosenthal will discuss that with the host of The Guy Benson Show, Guy Benson. Until then, thanks for listening. I'm Jared Halpern. This is the Fox News Rundown from Washington.
Stay up to date by subscribing to this podcast at foxnewspodcasts.com. Listen ad-free on Fox News Podcasts Plus on Apple Podcasts. And Prime members can listen to the show ad-free on Amazon Music. And for up-to-the-minute news, go to foxnews.com.
Hey, it's Clay Travis. Join me for Outkick the Show as we dive deep into a mix of topics. New episodes available Monday to Friday on your favorite podcast platform and watch directly on outkick.com/watch.